Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whomever you love, welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. May you leave your daily burdens at the door, open your minds and hearts to be fully present for this time of fellowship and spiritual re-energizing. I'm Reverend Christy Anderson, the Commission Lay Leader of this congregation, and I'm joined today by our worship associate, Jeff Marsh. Let us enter into this time of worship in gratitude for the presence of everyone here today as we journey together to learn, to share, and to support one another, nurtured by the warm embrace of fellowship.
Resentment is like drinking poison and expecting it to kill your enemies.
The trap of resentment is probably the worst mental prison in the world. It is the inability to let go of anger and to perceive or real injustices we suffer. Some people let one or two or maybe 10 unpleasant experiences poison the rest of their lives. They let their anger ferment and rot their personality. They end up seeing themselves as victims of their parents, teachers, their peers and preachers.
As is the tradition in this church, we join in a shared silence in order to provide an opportunity for personal prayer, meditation, and reflection. I invite you to enter into a few moments of silence. Use this as an opportunity to delve into your mind and heart, or ponder these words from the website Vital Life Affirmations. It is not the events of life, but how we respond to them that defines the joy and success of our lives. Worship this month has raised our awareness of the burdens we cling to that deplete our energy and evoke lament and anger. I invite you to participate in a litany of release. I will lift up four burdens. After each, I will pause, at which time I encourage you to say aloud, "May I let go." For the fears that hold me back, may I let go. For the resentments I hold toward others, may I let go. For my struggle to control the uncontrollable, may I let go. For the weight of losses that hinder my ability to move forward, may I let go. Spirit of love and life, walk beside us as we work to liberate ourselves from the bindings that impede our journey toward wholeness. By releasing the weight that has constricted our ability to live more fully, may we replace it with an abundance of life-affirming possibilities. As we journey forward, may we forgive ourselves and others. And may we grace ourselves and others with the gift of kindness. Amen. So, thank you to Hal Walker and our wonderful choir for joining us this morning. In place of the reading cited in the order of service, I would like to share these words from Ali Begown from the website Ask a Rabbi. Holding on to anger toward another person is like holding a sharp object in the palm of your hand. The harder the squeeze, the more you suffer. If we cast blame, saying, "He makes me so angry," or "She's ruining my life," it's like blaming the sharp object in your for your pain when you're the one doing the squeezing. When we let go of anger and resentment, it's like releasing our grip on the sharp object. Hanging on to anger doesn't hurt the other person. It hurts us most of all. Psychotherapist Raquel Lerner provides a concrete example. One day, long after their abusive father died, Kate asked her brother Kevin how he felt about their painful childhood. "I can't condone how we were treated," said Kevin, "but I've finally forgiven Dad." Kate was astonished. "Not me. I'm so consumed with rage and hatred, I don't think I'll ever be able to forgive him." "But don't you see," Kevin said, "then Dad is still powerful. He's still beating you up." As long as we hold on to pain and base our emotional well-being on the actions of another, we remain a victim.
We all have private thoughts we are not ready to share. There will always be a better time to say them, and maybe easier then. In my hospice, we offer an experience to share these thoughts and feelings, the legacy letter. One of the chaplains with whom I work is a very special person. Kathleen radiates grace, empathy, and hope. One of her passions is taking the time with our patients to offer help writing down messages that are too difficult to say aloud. She may spend hours with someone reviewing a life and encapsulating this conversation into a message intended for the survivors. During this interview, she creates a bond and uses this to find the story which is important to share. It may be based upon a memory, a mutual experience, or an explanation of some pivotal event in one's life. The story is refined and distilled down to a short letter, usually a page. This letter then may be shared with the addressee, usually on the occasion of the funeral, or may be held private forever. The letters are often from spouse to spouse or parent to child. Often they tell stories of lifelong love, pride, and respect, such as when Cyril wrote letters to his wife and 5 daughters. All of his letters were quite touching. One reads, "My little Blondie, you were Daddy's girl from the day you were born. As a child and now in this season of my life, you are always ready to help me. Whether gardening or plowing the snow, you are always at my side. I love how you greet me with a hug and kiss every time you see me. Somehow you make it stand out, touching the core of my heart every time. I am proud of your spirit and your perseverance. You are amazing. My heart swells with pride in all that you have become. My blessing for you is that your days be filled with love, laughter, and a remembrance of all the wonderful times we've had together." Unfortunately, thoughts and memories at the end of life are not always this positive. The review of life that often accompanies a prolonged death brings out these deep-seated feelings of hurt and memories of missed opportunities. Legacy letters may help with this process too. A woman who was succumbing to breast cancer at our center was attended to by her mother at the bedside for weeks. Her mother rarely left her side, sleeping and eating every meal in her daughter's room. It was quite unusual. Despite this apparent devotion, the daughter shared in her private moments with Kathleen that she resented her mother because she felt that she showed favoritism to her brother for their whole life. This was hard for her to share, but the process allowed her to confront a deeply guarded resentment and present it to her mother in a non-judgmental way. Letters such as these are often kept private to the end. This patient chose to share it with her mother after her death. The lesson to me is that it is never too late to tell those about whom you care the truth held deep inside. Doing so with the help of someone with a kind heart and a sensitive ear helps resolve unspoken thoughts and even resentments in a way that allows growth even as a life may be approaching its end.
I'd like to share a quote by theologian Frederick Buechner that I have to admit appeals to my darker side. Of the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. To lick our wounds, to smack our lips over grievances long past, to roll over our tongue the prospect of bitter confrontations still to come, to savor the last tooth and morsel of both the pain you are given and the pain you're giving back. In so many ways, it is a feast fit for a king. As we gloat with satisfaction, however, the author points out that, quote, the chief drawback is that you, indeed, are wolfing down yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. We do, indeed, tend to savor grievances long past. I've worked so hard and have been so dedicated to this company, I can't believe my boss promoted her best friend's son instead of me. It would serve her right if that new guy really screws up this department and she gets demoted. Sometimes our automatic reaction to pain inflicted upon us is to wish pain upon the other. We live in a society that creates within us a feeling of entitlement, and we resent those who treat us unjustly. We relish licking our wounds, standing our ground, and feeling self-righteous. Releasing resentment takes courage, self-discipline, and exertion. So why bother to release resentment? Our own physician, Dr. Jeff Marsh, will explain why it's important to release resentment.
Put on my different hat. Life is stress. Stress is life. Nearly every event in life comes with some degree of stress, and the body has found ways to use this to grow and to heal, such as when the strain of exercise leads to stronger muscles, bones, and cardiovascular conditioning. The hormonal response to stress, even psychological stress, includes the release of cortisol and catecholamines from the adrenal glands. Immediately, these lead to an increase in heart rate and breathing needed to elude the danger. They also change the immune system to redistribute blood cells, white blood cells, to address a new invasion. Uncontrolled and sustained stress can have deleterious effects throughout the body. The cardiovascular system undergoes thickening of blood vessels and development of high blood pressure. Extreme stress can even provoke acute heart failure. The immune system can change with increased susceptibility to infections and cancer. Cytokines released in response to stress can even escalate aspects of the immune system that promote autoimmune disease. The digestive system is an early victim of stress with potential for irritable bowel syndrome, ulcer disease, and inflammatory bowel disease. The effect on metabolism may result in alteration of eating patterns and weight gain. Diabetes mellitus can result from sustained elevation of cortisol levels. Psychological effects of stress manifest in many ways across the continuum. Nearly every person shows their stress in some way. It may be with sleep difficulties, lack of concentration, self-mutilation, such as biting fingernails, my personal vice, and substance abuse or chronic pain. Fortunately, Many studies reveal that any of these manifestations can improve with sustained stress reduction.
Well, that was stressful. Resentment is not as much about what the other person did, but how we react to it. Holding on to resentment is a choice we make. I'll highlight this point with a reflection written by Ram Dass from his book, How Can I Help? Ram Dass was part of a team of Western medical providers who were in India inoculating the population against polio. His team encountered a family in a remote village adamantly opposed to the vaccine based on religious beliefs. Local authorities instructed the team to take whatever steps necessary to inoculate. So team members physically wrestled and restrained each member of the family in order to administer the shot. The father was particularly resistant and fought back fiercely. Immediately after all family members had received the vaccine, the father stood up and, in gracious sincerity, invited the medical team to join him for tea. Ram Dass was astounded by the gesture of hospitality and expressed his surprise that the man showed no anger or resentment toward the team. The man replied by saying that they were just performing their job and he would have done the same thing in their position. He noted that they are still worthy of respect. There are places throughout the world where cultures and religions have ingrained the value of humility and compassion so deeply that individuals like this Indian family automatically put themselves into the shoes of others. I offered this story to emphasize that holding resentment is a learned cultural behavior. It is nurtured in societies that emphasize the right of the individual and that promote a sense of entitlement. Recognizing that holding resentment is culturally based, psychology has identified ways to help us unlearn the habit. We must begin the work of releasing resentment by first acknowledging the pain and the source of it, the offender. Resentments, of course, come in all shapes and sizes. Sometimes the pain we hold is not only directed at the responsible offender, but we may also be grieving the loss of life as we had imagined it. If I had received that promotion I deserved, I'd have more income, my coworkers would respect me more, and I'd have this company going in the right direction. Many of us devote considerable energy to lamenting the past, despite knowing that there's nothing that can change it. Releasing resentment is not only letting go of anger toward another person, it is resigning ourselves to the past and taking responsibility for our future. Like any other loss, we need to hold and honor the pain and then let it go to make room for life to unfold. Sometimes, however, the pain is so great and the wounds so deep that counseling is needed. The suggestions that I'm going to offer are not meant to replace counseling when needed, and I'm not a professional counselor. I'm offering stories of my experience and advice from sources that I've read. After acknowledging the pain of resentment, there are techniques for releasing it. I'm going to share three. One common suggestion offered by therapists to help us let go involves detaching emotionally from the event. Let's consider a minor but common cause of resentment. My neighbors have three very large dogs that bark a lot when their owners are not at home. Now, I could confront my neighbors, but I'm mindful of the fact that their right to own dogs is just as valid as my right to a quiet environment. Because it's more important for me to maintain good relations with my neighbors, I felt that complaining to them wasn't worth the battle. So in terms of taking action, I chose to let go. Yet mentally, I couldn't let go of the annoyance I felt when the dogs barked. The noise of nearby trains also disrupts my quiet environment. One day it occurred to me that the train noise didn't generate the same resentment in me as the barking dogs. I had accepted the train noise as a part of life and had surrendered to it and not let it affect me emotionally. Yet I was reacting to the dogs differently. Once I realized this, I started reframing the barking in the same context as the trains. By doing this, the sound of barking then grew to be a transient moment that I could simply let pass by without assigning any emotional feeling to it. Interestingly, when I was filled with resentment toward the barking, it seemed like I heard the barking all the time. Now that I'm more emotionally detached from it, I don't notice the barking nearly as much. I discovered that the release of my anger also reduced my awareness of the barking. Buddhist teachers explain this practice of emotional detachment using the metaphor of a smooth stream to represent our lives. Leaves fall onto the stream, disrupting its smoothness. When the leaves pass by, we must learn to acknowledge them, but then feel no emotion, as this is a natural part of life. To release emotion that's been turned into resentment, many therapists advise journaling. On a piece of paper, start writing, "I despise blank." And then it's suggested you start every sentence with the words, "I despise," fill in the blank. Or you could do this exercise verbally with a trusted friend. People who have done this report a new sense of lightness and freedom. My second suggestion to aid in reducing resentment is to demonstrate forgiveness even if you don't mean it. Now, I know that sounds hypocritical, and I recognize that as you use, we promote authenticity rather than hypocrisy, but in this case, it's for a good cause, and it's backed by science. Some of you may have former spouses with whom you share children. Being a divorced parent often requires being in the company of a former spouse during holidays, sports events, and special occasions. For the sake of the children, we put on a calm and pleasant demeanor, even though it may not feel authentic. At these times, our words and body language convey a congenial message that may contradict our thoughts and emotions of animosity. Repeatedly, scientific research has shown that when a conflict occurs between our actions and our thoughts, our brains demand consistency. To resolve the contradiction, our brain gives higher regard to our behavior than to our thoughts. Our behavior in front of our children is not reflecting our deep resentment. So over time, our resentful thoughts begin to recede as our brains work to reconcile our thoughts to match our demeanor. As our resentment lessens, we can then reflect upon the lessons that we've learned from the experience that prompted the resentment. By practicing forgiveness and honoring lessons learned, the process has been ignited that will propel us forward in greater peace. My third suggestion is perhaps the most effective, but most challenging. It is developing the capacity to view the situation through the eyes of compassion. Putting ourselves in the shoes of the other requires us to look at the limitations, background, shortcomings, insecurities, and fears that shape their behavior. I want to tell you a little bit about my great-grandmother. Grandma lived alone in a two-story house tucked between the Elks Club and a church on a busy commercial street. Her home was the only residence for blocks. She'd lived in the home for 70 years, refusing to budge as the commercial development engulfed her neighborhood. At age 97, Grandma was unable to walk or care for herself, so family members had her removed from her home by ambulance personnel and placed in a nursing home against her will. For the final 2 years of her life, Grandma lashed out at nursing home staff and family members with hateful language. She had no filters when it came to expressing her opinions. She was hard to love and easy to resent. Life in the nursing home was drastically different for Grandma. She had experienced the loss of her mobility. She'd been forced to leave her beloved home and almost all of her personal possessions. She no longer had the power to make even minor decisions, such as when to get up in the morning, when to bathe, when and what to eat. Her only form of control was how she communicated with others. Loudly proclaiming the word no was the only way she could exert an opinion and feel a small amount of independence. Of course, she wasn't justified in verbally abusing others as she did. Yet by reflecting upon someone in this situation and acknowledging her losses, our hearts can be softened and our resentment reduced. By being sensitive to the situation of others, we can detach from their words on a personal level and remember that their hurtful language may arise from their pain. Ali Begaum notes that hurt people hurt people. She reminds us that replacing resentment with compassion is, quote, the difficult but liberating work of shifting our perspective. Developing a compassionate heart and exercising our forgiveness muscle takes practice. We can practice with small steps every day. 27 years ago, I was driving home from a stressful day at work in heavy traffic. I had picked up my 5-year-old son from childcare, and I was particularly frantic to get home because he seemed to have a fever. As I approached the off-ramp, a speeding car from the left lane suddenly cut in front of me, forcing me to slam on my brakes and swerve onto the shoulder. I pounded my hands on the steering wheel in anger and shouted to no one in particular, "You jerk, you nearly caused an accident." My son looked at me in shock and said, "Maybe he's in a hurry because he has a sick baby with him." Here was my 5-year-old showing more compassion than I had. I felt ashamed of my outburst. That incident has stayed with me all these years. Now, when speeding drivers do something that annoys me, I always imagine that the driver has a good reason for driving that way. Over the years, I honestly have come to a place where driving is a calmer experience. The more we practice letting go, the more comfortable it becomes, and the better equipped we are for the journey through life and the aging process. We have it within our power to reduce the negative energy poisoning us. The choice is ours. Ask yourself, do I need to work on releasing resentment? If so, I invite you to declare your intention to release a resentment by writing it on the blue piece of paper given to you with the order of service. You won't be asked to share what you write. Hold on to your statement of intention and regard this vow to release resentment as a gift to yourself. Give yourself the gift of releasing negative thoughts gnawing away at your energy and spirit. Liberate yourself and make room to fill the void with love. The old adage is, forgive and forget. I challenge you to forgive and live. May it be so. Amen. In support of our capital campaign, Leah Gillig would like to share a reflection.
You might have seen me around as Buildings and Grounds or RE teacher or a vampire last night. If you don't know me, you probably know my daughter, Sonara. She's 7. She's very vivacious. First time I came to this church, actually, was a little bit before she was born, and there was a dragonfly on the program. If you know anything about me, I've got a dragonfly tattoo. I consider it like a spirit animal. So it was kind of a sign to me to keep checking this place out. Didn't come back for a while because Sonara came along and brought her around when she was a little baby, and she really bonded with a lot of the people here. During that time was a very difficult time for me, and this is a very good church for me to be at. That was when my former husband converted to Jehovah's Witnesses, and that was a big struggle, as you might guess. This church has really helped me get through some of those times. This has really helped me provide a place for my daughter to, and I visualize it, helping her continue to learn to look at belief systems critically and be able to think for herself someday and make her own decision about what her beliefs will be. The Jehovah's Witnesses have this belief that there is end time coming up soon, and it's going to be this great, big, catastrophic, horrible thing to live through. And after that, they will create a paradise on earth. I feel like part of my vision for her, part of my vision for this church, is that we can do that without monsters and death and dismemberment and disgusting, horrible things happening. I feel like we can do that. We can build our own paradise on earth without, you know, vengeful monsters and gods and whatnot. Melissa said a couple of years ago, maybe, and this has stuck with me for a long time, that these are the only hands that God has. I want to prove to her, I want to prove to all of us that we can do that. We can create this kind of a beautiful space without something horrible and, oh, scary. We can make this, we can make a really beautiful place for us to have a spiritual home. We can make a very beautiful place for us to appeal to other people. And we can do it in a loving way, not in a, I can do it in a loving way. So I hope that you all consider that. And when it comes to the time that you're putting your pledge together for this building, for this grounds update, for everything that we plan to do, so I think we can really make a big difference to our community. I think we can make a big difference to, you know, people who live nearby. I think we can make a big difference. So I hope you will join me in that. Thank you.
The Capital campaign team would like to celebrate the terrific progress made so far toward our goal. We appreciate that folks have been taking the time they need to thoughtfully consider their commitment. So far, we have received 65 pledges. We thank those who have already pledged and ask those who have not yet done so to consider making their pledge this week. We are looking forward to bringing the campaign to a conclusion and want every gift to be counted. We'd also like to be sure we understand the intentions of those who have made a donation but not completed a pledge card. Capital campaign team members are available to speak with you at their table in Fessenden Hall after the service. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. Go now and let your light shine to the world.